Rightio, racing at heart today, absolutely wrapped to be in the Goulburn Valley here at Northern Rivers Equine with Dr. Kath McIntosh. Firstly, Kath, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Paul.
Beautiful property you got here, ever expanding. Had lunch with Luke and yourself, and you're a very passionate couple of people behind it. Are you wrapped with how it's travelling for a start?
Ah, couldn't be happier, really. Like, the quality and the way it's growing is just amazing. You know, the quality of the stallions we've got here, the quality of stock we've got on the property, and the variety of clients that we deal with, from those people that are, you know, very commercial to those that just have, you know, the one little hobby horse and the family that they've had in their generations of their own families for forever. So we've got a full mix of everything.
Yeah, it's enormous. We will finish up back here, with what you got now. But Racing at Heart is designed to, I suppose, find out why people do their chosen sport and how they come about getting into it. McIntosh is a name involved in racing, but are you from a racing background at all?
No, not at all. I grew up on a dairy farm and, very passionate about cows and farming, and, all I ever wanted to be was a cattle vet. Used to love it when the vets come out to the farm when I was little and, you know, just hang off them, you know, trying to see what they were doing. And that's all I wanted to do, just mad on cows and wanting to be a vet. And when I went up to Sydney to do my degree up there. So I'm originally from Gippsland, Victoria, and went to Sydney and did my 5 years up there to be a vet. And that was an amazing time. You know, I was a very green country girl thrown into a city that I'd never been to, and into the rigors of veterinary science. But, you know, it really opened my eyes and broadened my perspective on the world. And I was fortunate to travel around a lot of places in Australia, doing placement, work placement with lots of different animals, which was required of the degree. And through that, I sort of found that I actually really enjoyed the horse placements. I worked on a thoroughbred stud and, you know, at the sort of tail end of stud season leading into their yearling prep. And then I also did a stint with Alabar as a student as well, which also coincided with their standard bred yearling prep as well. I found I actually liked it, not having had any experience with horses, but probably my own pedigree goes back to my grandfather who, he used to own a few racehorses, and, every weekend if, you know, we're on the round at his place, on the radio, on the TV were the races. So, you know, sort of had that understanding of racing, but, never, you know, physically involved in it.
So I go back to the start of it. I think you're from Warrigal?
Sale.
Sale, similar place, sort of down that way. Anyway, yeah. It's a long way from nowhere. But no horses when you were, like, younger? You didn't have pony club horses or...?
Nah, I always wanted like any little girl does, wants a pony. But my sister, who was 10 years older than me, she'd had a horse. And I think by the time she'd gone through that stage, mum and dad had a gutful and didn't want to entertain my passion of riding a horse. So, when I was at uni, I learnt to ride a horse. Like, probably 20. On one of my placements, I went up to up into Queensland, up sort of near Emerald, and worked on one of the Australian cattle company, actually two of their properties, for about 6 weeks. And so I learnt to ride a horse there, and learnt to muster. So that's how I learnt to ride. And the first horse that they put me on was a horse called Dopey. But Dopey was, and he was named because he was very, very quiet, but he was also like 17 hands, and I was all of about 48 kilos ringing wet. And so it was always a challenge to get on this horse, but he was good to me and he taught me how to ride. And I think I only come off once. That's when he was doing his job, heading off to cut some cattle off, and I was off in La La Land and just went straight over his head as he turned around and went back the other way. And anyway, he come back to me and dropped his head, and I had to find a stump in the paddock that was big enough so I could get back on him. But I always remember that. And then the next farm I went to, they had another horse there, and I loved it.
So you're obviously a very smart person, because to become a vet, you've got to be, and I might, may not even mention the fact that you are a doctor, like you are a qualified vet. You're very smart. You probably had goals by that stage, I'd say by the time you're 20. Were you nervous getting on a horse and thinking this could derail everything I was doing, or it was just you were there, the guys were saying, let's do it, so you did it?
Yeah, I just have never stopped at anything in my life. Like, that never gave that a consideration that it might be dangerous or I might get hurt. It was just like, oh, yeah, I can do this. That's kind of my approach to anything in life, really. Just get in and have a go and try it.
You know, there's two guys that will be listening to this and they'll remember the name of that first horse you've ever ridden, Mark Hughes and Dennis Bice. They'll be ready to give you a bit of a hard time. Yeah. You probably should have faked his name. Can you explain then how a cattle girl always wanted to do cattle can fall in love with horses? Like, I mean, I ask a lot of people this, and I suppose they're kids. You're 20 years old before you've sort of started having any real involvement with them. Can you explain how that comes about?
Yeah, so when I finished uni, I came to the Golden Valley and worked as a dairy vet. And so there wasn't much harness racing, or if any, in sale in Gippsland. So I'd never really had much to do with it. The uni was not far from Harold Park, so I sort of, in Sydney back then, so I sort of knew that harness racing existed, but never been.
You never went to Harold Park?
No. We always went to the Nag's Head pub that was just opposite the uni, but never ventured quite any. Harold Park was just down the road from the Nag's Head pub, but we never seemed to get past the pub. Anyway, when I come to the Golden Valley, you know, suddenly there was a lot of, you know, harness racing around this area. And I guess it sort of was interested to see what it was about. Also, there was quite a severe drought not long after, you know, a couple of years after I arrived here, and the cattle work had dropped away. And I started doing some horse work because I just wanted something to do, and the other vets in the practice weren't really keen to touch horses. It's usually quite a polarizing topic, veterinary horse work and cattle vets. So I started doing some horse work, and I found I really enjoyed it. Also found that the clientele really, you know, took off, it just started growing. And eventually I sort of had such a following, but the clinic wasn't so keen on and retaining that horse work and building it any further, that I then took the step to start my own practice. And there was, I did look at a job in a large horse practice over in Western Australia. We were going to go over there. One of my mentors in the equine veterinary sort of profession, he sort of half, you know, convinced me that no, it's a good thing, you know, have a go on your own, like you've got this far. So we decided to stay here, and we started the practice, and just myself out of the back of my car for probably a couple of years before I put on another vet. Just slowly grew up from there, had a part-time receptionist for a while, and then it grew until we've got the facilities. You know, we bought the first 80 acres of the farm in about 2014, I think, you know, had about a dozen horses on it and some cows. And then, and it's just grown from there, and the cows have disappeared and the horses have stayed. But the attraction around the horses is that I really enjoy the repro work, so the breeding side of it. I've always been passionate about breeding, and I did a specialist breeding module when I was at uni. So I was always really keen on that. But I also really love sport, all sports, and love doing, you know, playing it myself or running, whatever. So I appreciate the horse as an athlete, and I find it fascinating, the injuries that they get, the way we can diagnose, and then the treatments that we have available to them to fix them. And then the other side of it is the rehabilitation side as well. So as a vet, I get to sort of doing what I'm doing, I get the best of both worlds. I see them as an athlete, and then, you know, obviously in breeding season we still have all that regular work plus the breeding side of it as well. So it's all sort of come full circle. And then because I love farming and I'm a country girl at heart, you know, having the farm and growing the grass and, you know, having fat mares and foals and that side of things, you really enjoy that. And my husband Luke also, you know, loves the farming, and, you know, he does all our pastures and cuts all our hay. And yeah, we take a lot of pride in the quality of pastures and hay that we make, and you know, growing the farm and improving the farm. So And now that we've got, well, 500 acres of it, you know, it's quite a lot to look after, but we're, you know, improving things all the time.
You're quite, you're an infectious person. You're, I've been fortunate enough to do a lot with you, and you push me to do a lot of other stuff as well. Do you think that's sort of what steered you, because you are driven, but you, like when you get a bit of a passion for things, that's what steered you towards the horses as much?
Yeah, I just, I've always been very driven individual, and, you know, I always like to learn and grow and learn as much as I can about everything, and, yeah, and challenge myself and push to the next level, and to do it in a quality professional way, and I think that's that's just how I got about things all the time in my life. My mum always said to me that that the more you put in, the more you get out of it, and that's kind of a philosophy that I've, you know, applied to my whole life, really, like whether it was back when I was running and training. And, you know, the more you put into it, the better you went in the races that you went into, and the harder you study at school, the better you go in your exams. And so I think that's definitely a philosophy that I live by, and apply to the harder we work here, the better job we do for all our clients and all our patients and in the industry.
It's a hard balancing act sometimes too, of how hard you push yourself, and you can definitely overdo it, and that'd be one of the worries here. You said you did some time with Alabar early on. Was that a yearling prep, or was that also repo work as well that you started there with Alabar?
When I was a student at vet school, it was just yearling prep. I think that was back in the day of John O'Marney. And he was terrific. He, you know, he taught me a lot about handling yearlings and prepping them and looking after them. And that was on the back of a thoroughbred yearling prep that we'd done as well. So, and then later on, once I'd started up my own practice, I then was the assistant manager to John Coffey at Alabar. I was in that role for about 2 years. Just basically keeping an eye on things on the farm. We did all their veterinary work and communicating with the clients, all that sort of stuff.
Did you look, when you're doing the yearling preps, did you look over the road and at the stallions and say, yeah, that really interests me? Is that sort of a little bit of the initial itch to scratch, or?
Not really. Not at that point in time. Like, as I grew to, and John Coffey was really instrumental in growing my knowledge of the breeding and the pedigrees, and traveling around doing information nights for their clients and things. I, you know, learned a lot off him in terms of pedigrees and started to get to know the stallions then. And that was probably where my interest in the stallion side of things began.
Yep.
And just that desire to improve things and make things better. And then I guess now the stallion thing, you know, we make all the foals, we foal them down, we rebreed the mares, we wean them, we take them to the sales, we look after those horses as athletes on the track. The stallion part was the final tick of the box, basically, in that having the stallions, we now provide the semen to make those foals, and so we've sort of gone the full cycle. Or the full circle of the cycle of a standard bred, basically.
A lot of people do that. They'll do the full cycle. They don't include the stallion part, though. I mean, like, you've got horses, you know, you've got horses here for Loris and Bloodstock. You've got Poster Boy here. I'm tipping you've got Poster Boy's mum and sisters and close relations to Poster Boy here as well. But you've also got, you know, him here standing as a stallion. Like, you haven't just taken on a little bit of that circle. You've taken the entire circle, basically. The only thing you haven't done is started training them, but we will talk about that in a sec. But you have embraced the entire circle of the standard breeds.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I don't know, I just don't do things in halves. I want to do everything. Yeah, I want to do a good job, and I want to provide quality and help grow the industry in a different way. And, you know, I'm young enough that I've got the energy and the desire to be able to do it. And, you know, things have changed a lot, as everyone knows, in the last 12 months. So anything is possible. And the sky's the limit, so I'll always continue to improve and grow.
Have you ever wanted to train one?
The answer
is yes, because she gave a cheeky smirk. She's going to probably say no, but I reckon there's an itch there as well.
I think it'd be great. Like, I love training, you know, myself as an athlete. Like, I always enjoyed triathlons and things like that, and all the things that incorporate into training. And there's so many different ways, you know, as science improves, you know, different things about human athletes, and also then the follow on is, you know, the equine athletes. So, I mean, I think that would be great, but I don't think at this stage that is anywhere on the agenda. We've got quite enough on our plate at the moment, and I just take great delight in following those horses that we, you know, we've bred, or, you know, have been on farm, or that we treat as patients through the clinic. And that I think is enough to fulfill that side of the training, you know, going and watching them at the races. And, you know, I guess we see plenty of the, when we see them as patients, you know, we see plenty of the lows. So being able to celebrate in when they, you know, do have success is very rewarding.
A lot of people may or may not know, listen to this, I'm tipping more won't know, but you did have your trial license for a little while. You didn't get your race license, I don't think, did you? But you definitely drove in trials, because I know I drove against you.
Yeah, yep. So, and that was, getting my trial license or driving license was pivotal to understanding the standardbreds, the gates and the paces versus trotters, and how they're geared up. And then particularly from a veterinary perspective and a lameness point of view, when trainers would tell me, oh, it's doing this in the card, it's hanging out, or it's hanging in, or it's, you know, wasn't until I actually sat behind a horse that I could understand what they were trying to explain to me. And it gave me a better understanding of their horses by doing that. You know, I learned about a lot of the gear, you know, how to gear them up, and what you use where and why. And then also gave me an understanding of the differences between paces and trotters, and the types of injuries that they get. And then, you know, I can sort of understand that in a veterinary sense then.
It must have been an eye-opener. I mean, people can drive track work and all the rest, but you know as well as I do, the trials are different. I can remember the first couple of times I drove, even at trials at Bendigo, you go past this grandstand and it's all lit up. Like, there's so many more things to take in. Do you get a much greater respect, I suppose, for the horsemen when they can relate stuff back to you, especially if it's horse has been in a full field and you can talk to them straight after the race as a vet to say, oh, what happened to this horse?
Yeah, absolutely. And the information that those drivers and trainers can give back is so valuable. They work with these horses every day, or they drive them at all their races, and they know them inside out. So, you know, what they have to say is really important, and they have a really valuable insight that, you know, often we can, learn by or use to, you know, try and figure out what's going on. And, you know, like, yeah, take my hat off to all those drivers. They do a phenomenal job, and, you know, it's a great feeling being out on that track, and, you know, that competitive edge and the adrenaline, it's just amazing.
Is it finished, that scratch? Like, are you going to go back and drive again at any stage, or are you?
No, that's scratched. I'd love to, and I love it. And occasionally I get in the cart when I want to maybe sit in front of another horse and listen to its how it breathes over my shoulder or something like that. But yeah, that driving's finished. I've, you know, with two little kids and all this happening with the business, you know, I can't afford to be injured, and to be honest, I've got enough on my plate, which, you know, it's probably surprising to hear me say that, but yeah, I've got enough going on. I don't need to be doing that as well.
You have got plenty going on. I just think that part of it's great. You're 20 years old and you start riding your first horse, and you know, you've driven in trials. You've actually embraced not just the veterinary component of it. Like, basically before you were 20, you were pretty much a cowgirl, and then you become an actual cowgirl. Like, you started riding horses and the rest and enjoying them. And I think a lot of people might be shocked to know that, because a lot of vets, I think, just go to veterinary school and then come out and they perceive themselves to be experts a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think the more you know, the more you realise you don't know, and you know, you're always continually learning, and even once you, and I think that's probably the biggest thing for new graduates coming out, is that you do know a lot. It's just about knowing how to apply that in a practical sense and in the real world. But you, if you don't keep trying to push yourself and continue to learn, then you won't grow as a veterinarian and your value to clients will be less. So the more you push yourself and the more you learn, and, you know, I'm always reading up or revising something, or, you know, and they're always making new advances in medicine or treatments. And the more you learn with that, the more value you are to your clients. And the more enjoyable the job is. Like, I love being a vet and I wouldn't be anything else.
Because you love working with horses, or just the whole thing?
Just the whole process. I still do a bit of cattle work for, you know, sort of select group of clients. And, you know, I love the horse work and just what we have now with the clinic. We've got a great team of people within that clinic. And that overflows into the stud farm that we've got and that's growing. And, you know, the farming side, I just wouldn't have it any other way.
I love the fact you think outside of the square with a lot of the stuff you do, including this farm here, because you could have quite easily set it up as a veterinary farm, fold down mares, done the occasional yearling parade and the rest. But you've embraced probably taking on more and thinking like outside the square. And what I'm saying with that is the initial inclusion of Woodlands here, like that were a New Zealand stud, to get them involved here, you had to travel to New Zealand and meet them and try and formulate a plan and the rest. You have goals, but you know that there's a lot of work got to go on behind the scenes to do that. But a lot of other studs here wouldn't have even thought about doing it. Like, is that been your nature and your way all along?
I guess. Always been a little bit different. Probably people think I'm a bit different sometimes too. But
probably why you and I get along so well.
But, you know, the thing about, you know, the relationship I have with Woodlands, you know, Andrew Grish, and, you know, he's a vet, and he's, you know, he's very passionate about, you know, his veterinary life and his career, and he's been instrumental in a lot of things that have been developed for the use in horses over the years. And so I guess we share a similar values in that way, but they are, you know, just a genuine progressive organisation, and, you know, it's a great relationship that we have with them, and they're also prepared to, you know, just think outside the square and keep pushing the envelope a little bit, and that's to the benefit of the entire industry in having us do that.
But you also change the way people, I suppose, look at things and do things. As far as even Woodlands themselves, like, I mean, they brought out a first season sire last stud season, and stood him here. Like, I mean, you know, it's one of their babies. They could have definitely stood him in New Zealand, but, you know, American Ideal comes here because he's very well patronised in Australia, and it was probably a no-brainer. But, you know, a horse like Lather Up, for them to bring him out, that's got to be, one, a good vote of confidence for you, but also the fact that they're prepared, as you said, to look a little bit differently at how they do things.
Yeah, and look, they're prepared to back their own product. They don't bring anything down unless they're happy that it's going to be the next thing. And I think that's, you know, the fact that they set Lather Up here shows that they, you know, they've prepared to back it in both countries. And also, you know, with the role that Mark Hughes plays in Australia, you know, they just back him all the way. You know, he's a real asset to Woodlands and does a terrific job. So, you know, that goes hand in hand with Lather Up as well.
Yeah, because Woodlands are an asset for Mark as well, because he's able to do things and they back each other both ways. And they are growing. I mean, as far as a stud goes in Australia, they're definitely growing their footprint in here. So it must be exciting to be a part of that as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And just to have, you know, they've got years and years of experience and they've worked from the, you know, bottom all the way up. And, yeah, you know, they've got some really exciting ideas on the horizon for the future, and they're, you know, looking to, you know, looking at yearlings and, you know, just reinvesting into the industry and you know, supporting those who support them.
Your passion for harness racing, like, you don't just make money out of it as far as being a vet and all the rest, you definitely put back in. And you probably went out on a limb, I think, last year or probably a couple of years ago, because you started standing stallions, and I think the first one you stood was 10 No Trump, am I right, for Penguins?
Yeah, Race? Yep.
And then Yankee Rockstar, who beautifully bred horse, but possibly, you know, not that commercial on any normal year because of the fact that they could go to unlimited stallions and other ones, but you're prepared to take a risk. This year you've got a lot of as I would, you know, I'm going to say Australian and New Zealand bred. I'm not going to go with the other word that everyone wants to keep going. And that did change because of the way Victoria are embracing horses that raced here with the VicBred program and the likes. But you were only too happy to take, you know, Poster Boys, Soho Tribeca's and those sort of horses and stand them here and give them every chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we've definitely thrown everything at this, you know, the stud side of things. And it's, you know, it's a huge it's financial investment. And I guess, you know, a risk. I mean, stallions are a risk at any stage. But, it, you know, people would say to me, like, the industry is, like, it's not thriving. Why? You know, but I think it's got the potential to thrive. And I think we're in a unique position now where people are recognising that our Australian colts are as good as anything else in the world, and they can compete on a grand stage. I think Victoria especially is being very progressive in how they're promoting harness racing. You know, the Trots Vision, you know, it's a professional, comprehensive, you know, footage that you know, is really giving harness racing the wings that it needs to get out there to the greater public. And then these stallions that are, you know, bred in Australia and New Zealand, you know, they've got quality pedigrees. I'm very lucky that, you know, two out of the six stallions we had here this year out of Australian Broodmares of the Year, you know, they've got American pedigrees. If they had to come down from North America, they would have, you know, probably had three times the amount of money beside their names, and, you know, would have, I mean, we pretty well got to a full book with both of them, or very close to it. Poster Boy and Soho Tribeca. But yeah, people are willing to support those stallions because they're realising their type, their speed, their pedigree is as good as anything else. However, we've still got to have that right balance. You know, we can't be reliant on those stallions. We need to be able to still have access to the best in the world and pedigrees, otherwise, you know, you just breed yourself into a corner. So having those stallions that do still come down out of America or Europe, whether it's trotting or pacing, whether they stand in the flesh or as frozen semen, we need to have access to that to keep building our stock and building our industry and getting that quality into our racing stock.
Do you like the way harness racing in general, I suppose, I think it's worldwide, but definitely in Australia and New Zealand anyway, do with the semen and the collection of semen? You and I have done some stock footage, hopefully that will get released later this year, about how you collect, but how safe, much safer it is compared to the thoroughbreds. And then just recently you see the controversy about whether certain mares have been AI'd or manually served or whatever. Do you like the way that harness racing has gone, as in working towards a future, but it's effectively a safer future for everyone involved?
Yeah, I think it also gets greater access of the semen to a wider number of people. You don't have to physically send your mares to the stallion. You can have your mare at home and still get her served, and whereas otherwise might not have been able to afford to send her off to, you know, a thoroughbred adjustment farm as such. And the artificial reproductive technologies that we're able to use, you know, AI, frozen semen, embryo transfer, you know, also allows us to keep improving our genetics. You know, embryo transfer is a great way to improve your genetic gain. So, you know, those top race fillies, you're able to breed and get yearlings out and get those. Yeah. So that all goes a long way to improving our quality of our stock. And, and you know, when those mares are served, you know, they're clean, the semen's clean, everything, you know, so you have less issues in terms of infection and fluid buildup. I mean, you still have those, but you just sort of take out the excess out of the equation, I guess.
As a vet, do you find it fascinating that the thoroughbreds are still stuck back, you know, like turn of the century? Like they still pretty much do it the same way then. Do you find it funny? Like they're the world leaders on everything else, but they still do the same way? Or do you think there's a certain part of that that's good?
I think that it'd be great if they used artificial technologies. I think that would be, you know, a step in a progressive direction. But, you know, I guess they have their rules and meet, you know, and ideas of why that's not acceptable. You know, whether that will change one day, I don't know. But I think definitely harness racing has got the step ahead in terms of, you know, allowing us to use these technologies.
You put your, I suppose, your name behind yourself as much as money, because it's an honorary thing, but you're on the board of the Harness Breeders Victoria as well. And I can comfortably say, like, they've been terrific for me as well, Harness Breeders Victoria. But you have a passion for everyone to be able to improve, and you want to try and guide it that way, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I have a set of knowledge and skills that not everyone has, and if I can use that to help improve or grow the industry in some way, then definitely willing to try and do that as much as I can. And there are definitely, you know, there's so many ways I can contribute, or hopefully in a positive way, to the industry through, yeah, the Harness Breeders Committee. I think it's a great committee. They're very passionate, and, you know, done some great things, you know, in the, like, especially in the last 12 months, given all the challenges of COVID. So, yeah, there's definitely, you know, and there's more to be done. There's a lot of room for improvement and things we can do, and to, you know, just to educate, improve the professionalism of the breeding industry. And I think, you know, with the Breed to Succeed series that we did on Facebook last year, I think that was very informative for a lot of people. So we'll continue down that vein again this year, and change in some way.
I think the one thing about the Breeders Association is basically how young a lot of you guys are. Nick Hooper will be sitting in his chair. He'll sit up because he'll be thinking I've been called young again. But you are a young committee. You're not an older committee that just rests on your laurels. You actually are trying to improve harness racing. And I think that's one of the things I find as someone going around. I think that's what's driving the breeding improving, is that the people, not necessarily in charge of it, because you guys don't get the final say. It's HRA and HRV and New South Wales who say it. But you guys are still there pushing and championing a cause.
Yeah, and I think we're, you know, the industry, you know, we're taking on board what they're wanting and trying to, you know, get it to a point where we're building change and positive change. So hopefully we can continue to do that. And I think the cross-section of the committee is such that we, you know, we have access to a wide range of people within the industry. So it's a great way to get that, their voices heard, and ideas pushed to a HRV level.
Nearly finished. You've got the next arm, I suppose, of what you do. You fold down and all the rest. But yearling preps, like, it seems like a never-ending cycle for Northern Rivers Equine that you keep continually going. But you've got yearling preps in now for the nutrient sale in April 10 and 11. One, do you enjoy the yearling sale component of it?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Biggest smile ever just come on a face, I can tell you that now.
It's just, you know, they go from... you know, just a horse in the paddock, and, you know, when they're at the yearling sale, that's the best that horse is ever going to look, you know, like that. Well, that's what you try and aim for. And, you know, we have a cross section of vendors that we're, you know, representing, and, you know, we just want to do a good job for them and hope that they get rewarded for all their hard work and effort that they've put into that point. You know, it's a high risk sort of thing, this breeding. It's definitely a staying game, not a sprinting game. And yeah, and just seeing them come in, and, you know, and the education, you know, the getting their rugs on and having bits put in their mouths and learning to walk and lead and go on the walker and all those sorts of things. And as they, and then by the end of the prep, you know, you just have this horse who, you know, is you know, a bigger and improved version on where you started. And I think that's very rewarding. I mean, yearling prep is hard work. Like, it is, you know, it's, you know, boxes and brushing and working and being patient with these.
Sundays.
Yeah, and it's 7 days a week. Like, I mean, it's no different to a horse trainer. I mean, you know, it's, they're going to be fed morning and night or lunchtime as well, but, you know, and they're going to be exercised. So it's just that one step before, you know, training, I suppose. But it's a big commitment. It takes a lot of resources, a lot of people. You've got to have a good team of people to get them to the point where they get to the sales complex. And it's, I think you culminate the journey in the sales, but there's so much more is part of that actual prep, you know, it's the teamwork, it's the of the people and the horses, it's the education and the discipline and then, you know, that respect for the animal and each other and the environment that you're working in, you know, keeping things clean and tidy and having that routine. It's the whole process, and I think it's a great great team process to be involved in.
Nutrien, they come on board and it's new and it's different. One, are you excited about that part?
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's like for us, ideally, it's great from a timing perspective because we can actually put to bed the stud season and then start on the yearlings. I think it'll be looking forward to the, you know, the 4 days down at the sales. I think it'll be a great event, good atmosphere. You know, the APG sale this year, I think, was a really good atmosphere at that, which was great to have, you know, going on other years. It's been, it's a lot of negativity in the past. So I think building on the APG sale, I think the Nutrien sale is going to be another great atmosphere and you know, good place for everyone to be, vendors, buyers, and preparers.
You said it's good because you got time to put the stud season to bed. As a vet and someone that goes so hard, especially through breeding season, is it possibly one of the negatives that you maybe not get your time away? Not that anyone can go away right at the minute with COVID, but in a normal year, you might have been able to get a break through that May, April, May sort of time, whereas this year you may not be able to do that?
Yeah, it's definitely been a tricky balancing act, you know, for not just myself for time away, but for all the staff as well. So we tried to kind of rotate everyone through, you know, some holidays through January just to kind of freshen them up before the yearling prep started, and you know, and then you had to sort of think about, well, where does weaning fit in the picture of all that and all that sort of thing too. So a bit of planning and organization and also, you know, managing your staff to try and ensure that everyone's, you know, fresh enough to tackle the rigors of yearling prep.
As someone who likes doing things a bit different and all the rest, I would imagine Nutrien actually appeals to you as well because of that fact that it is different. It's potentially going to be showcased very, very different to APG in a way, because it's the same complex, but it's going to be a different format and the likes. Does that excite you?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's exciting for so many reasons. It should be the main event of the year, you know. Sales
are... Grand final.
Yeah, it's and for these breeders who have... It started back when they first got their stallion guide, you know, this process of... what do I breed my mare to this year, you know, way back then, and then they finally breed her and then it's got to arrive and that whole cycle. So it's the grand final for the breeders, and it should be showcased as such and it should be celebrated as that. You know, it's a great event and it should be something that everyone wants to attend every year.
Yeah, that's why some people get disappointed. It's interesting when you said that there is so much, like there's nearly 2 years of planning to go to a yearling sale. When people don't get their reserve or maybe don't even get a bid on certain horses, do you think that's where that disappointment comes from?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's shattering. I think that, you know, they've ridden that roller coaster ride that entire time, and you know, most people don't just sort of, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, what stallion am I going to? There's a lot of thought gone into that process, and then often it's not always the easiest journey to get a healthy foal or a healthy weanling or a healthy yearling. So there's a lot of things, you know, hurdles they have to get over. They have every right to be disappointed when they, you know, things don't quite go as, you know, they want to. But I guess that's the attraction and the risk of breeding to sell at the sales too, because basically they're predicting what's going to be sought after in 2 years, 3 years time.
Yeah.
So it's hard to predict that, and there's no right or wrong.
I was actually at the APG sale the other day, and a person, I won't name him, but he basically said that one breed wasn't selling. They had one, they said, well, we got this one wrong. They'd sort of conceded prior to it going into the ring that they'd, you know, it was just that for some reason that breed was out of favour, and it was interesting because they were having great results, but they'd already conceded. So I think they'd worked themselves up that there was going to be no disappointment. They knew that they weren't going to get what they were after, and they just sold the horse for whatever they got.
Yeah. And you can't predict what the buyer wants. You know, I think that, and ultimately you need two people that really like that horse, and maybe it's, you know, everyone has different criteria. That's why not everyone could breed a champion, not everyone could buy a champion, because everyone has different criteria for what they like in a horse. So you really just need to have two people that like it, maybe for different reasons, but as long as they're bidding, you've got a chance at, you know, actually doing well out of it. But yeah, it's really, cross your toes and fingers on the day and hope that someone bids on your horse.
I can't cross my toes. It's one thing I can't do. So
yeah. No, I'm not trying either, but it's,
I'm trying to do it right now and I can't. I seriously can't do it.
There's lots of things you can't do, Paul, so don't.
Racing at heart, like, it's designed for people, as I said, to find out why they got into it. I think people probably got a different side to you that they didn't know. I reckon there'd be a lot of people didn't realise you'd ever driven one. Dopey the horse, been ridden the first time as well. So that's actually pretty cool. What's next for Luke and Kath McIntosh and the two kids? We're not mentioning their names, but what is next? Not necessarily Northern Rivers, but is there any grand plans for you guys?
Nothing grand plan, but just really consolidate what we've got. Consolidation is just really important, I think, at the moment, so that we continue to provide the quality and professional service that we have. So you just got to make sure you're nailing that all the time. And you know, it's always a work in progress. There's always something you can improve and grow upon. And you know, I always bang on about it to, you know, the staff or anyone who'll listen, really, but it's the it's always the little things that count. So getting all those little things right and keeping them right is really important. And that's, I guess, our challenge now. We've got to kind of this point, you know, where we're standing 6 or 7 stallions a year, and, you know, we've got to get that right and make sure we keep doing that. And the farm, the 400 acres that we, you know, they brought sort of 18 months ago, you know, we've done a lot of work on that, and there's still a lot of work to be done to get it to how, you know, we want it to be. But that just takes time and it takes money to make, you know, put in new fences and all that sort of thing. So yeah, we'll just keep working away at what we're doing, and that's the plan. Yeah,
small term plan. Disappointing to hear that, because 12 months ago you put up a brand new stables and a walker, you then built a collection barn, you built more staying yards, and now all of a sudden you think you're going to sit back and do nothing.
I don't know about sit back and do nothing, but I think the staff will be pleased to hear that there's no more massive plans on the horizon, because they're pretty happy.
Some bloke was meant to have flown a drone over about 6 months ago or something like that. Would have been different footage to what it's like now, but we'll get around to that.
There'll be a lot of little things that I want to do over the next 12 months, and you know, and also want to be able to dedicate the time that I need to the harness breeders as well. And you know, there's a few projects there that we sort of want to get cracking, and yeah, so there's a lot of, you know, things like that I want to sort of do in the, I guess it used to be the off season, but it really isn't an off season anymore. It just kind of keeps rolling. But just keep building relationships, and hopefully can get out and about and this year. And you know, I would really like to meet some of these people that have bred to our stallions last season, and you know, put a face to a name, because you know, there's a lot of, you know, people perhaps I've heard of but never seen. So get out and about at the sales and also on the road, and just sort of meet those people and have a chat. And you always learn something new off someone, or you know, when you have a look at their farms and setups and you think, oh yeah, that's a good idea. So a lot of that sort of thing. And and then, you know, Luke and I have obviously got two little girls, so actually being present and being a mum is pretty important to me. So stud season, I live under a rock for about 5 months, so it's nice that they, you know, for them to know that they still have a mother, and that and they've got, you know, they're getting bigger and there's lots of things happening in their lives too.
It's fair to say one is a fair chance of becoming a vet, but we won't go there. We'll just leave leave her alone. Just very quickly, Bill and Ann Anderson coming on board, that must have been a great fillet for you. Like, you've got Poster Boy here, but you've got all their own mares as well. You fold down all those mares. That must have been a great sort of, I suppose, crowning moment in a way to get a quality stud, a quality breeding product that they've got to be able to help maintain and nurture their product.
Yeah, I really love that relationship that I've got with them. You know, with you know, the way in which they engage, you know, with the horses and the plans that they have for them, and they, you know, they just leave no stone unturned when they're preparing, you know, for breeding, or when they're looking at their foals and planning their futures. And yeah, it's just a It's a full circle service for them, and to have a poster boy and Yankee rock star here at Starters, it's just amazing. You know, that's to have their support and their faith that we can do those stallions justice, you know, means an enormous amount to me. And that relationship has been something that's it's just been fabulous, really.
If they're still listening, I might actually have to do a podcast, because I can remember Bill and Ann Anderson before they ever had a broodmare. They had one gelding racing. It was from memory with Noel Alexander. Was nearly their first horse that they had, and I can only remember its name, but I can't. But they've come a long way as well, so they keep growing, which I think is great. Kaf, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it, and I love everything you do. And I also thank you very much for everything you do for Campbell's Comments, because you do push me pretty hard. So anyone that knows you knows why you do that. So yeah, it's all good. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Paul.